The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the award-winning MG4, the no-compromise electric hatchback with a 450-kilometre range. Recharge your soul.
Sinn Féin have today unveiled a new policy on immigration. It promises, amongst other things, an audit of communities and areas and their services before asylum seekers are moved into the area. Piers Doherty is the deputy leader of Sinn Féin and he's with me now. Piers, you're welcome to the show. How do you imagine this audit working in real terms?
Well, look, this is a significant intervention from Sinn Féin. It marks a very clear immigration policy and differs from the government because it has community at the very centre. It talks about consultation, listening to community, but crucially that the state itself needs to carry out a full assessment of needs of community before they look at any centres going into community. And that hasn't happened, unfortunately. And we've had situations where very, very deprived communities, communities that don't have access to certain services, have seen more pressure being placed on them. So, yeah, how does that play out? It would be carried out by a government department. It would look at areas such as GP services, school places, proximity to transport links, and also the existing levels of disadvantage that an area is suffering or not suffering, if the case may be. And the best indicator for that is obviously the Pubble HP Deprivation Index that is already carried out for all communities right across the state. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel here. We have to look just at where these centres are going to be placed to make sure that the capacity is in the community to actually support the centres.
How will that work? I mean, are different scores attributed to kind of different categories and different levels of need? Because there's not a community in Ireland that won't complain about some level of service provided to it.
Let me tell you how it works at the minute. I represent Donegal, and Donegal has some of the highest levels of deprivation, but also the highest levels of Ukrainians who have temporary protection, and also the third highest outside of Dublin and Cork number of refugees. And when a new centre is opened in Donegal, I get a call telling me that the contract has been signed. I ask them, did you check about services in terms of GP services? Because many of the lists are closed, which means people can't access their GP. And I'm told no. Have you checked in relation to education services? I'm told no. So there is no needs assessment at the minute. So we're saying you have to...
No, I understand that. What I'm asking is, once that assessment is carried out, how is a decision made? Because nowhere in Ireland will tick every box. The most affluent suburb in the country still doesn't have enough GPs. Like, that's kind of across the board.
So the clear thing is there are going to be parts within the state that clearly should not be looked at in terms of new centres. That's clear. And the Pubble Index already points that out. The Pubble Index looks at deprivation right across the state, and it goes from a scale of one, which is severely disadvantaged and deprived, to very affluent areas, which there are in the state. So there are different capacities within communities. So this is a bit about cop on. It's about don't put new centres into a place where there's no school places or where there's no GP service. Don't put additional pressure in communities that are already struggling because of resources. Mm. And this is the first time the political party has outlined criteria in terms of service, in terms of centres that it would be there. The assessment looks at areas that you shouldn't put places in, but also areas that you can put places in. And some of that assessment will mean that you may need to put additional resources into those communities to support a centre. So it's a very clear criteria. And secondary to that, you will have a situation where there's a standardised consultation with the community. So the community, for the first time, will have a very clear and transparent way of engaging with the state in relation to whether a centre should be located there, whether additional support should be provided or not in terms of the needs of new people coming to the community.
Okay, before I go, because Patrick Costello is with us as well, Green Party Justice spokesperson, before I bring in Patrick, I mean, you gave me an example there with your own constituency of somewhere that wouldn't tick enough boxes at all in terms of providing this level of service to international protection applicants. Give me an example of somewhere where they should be living.
Well, let's look at, just go to the website, look at the Pubble HP Index. There is a map there. Every single community is mapped and they have different scores. Some of them are affluent, very affluent and extremely affluent. Those are some of the communities that have the ability to absorb these centres, because it's not just based on the income of individuals. It's also based on issues like housing, like GP services and all that. That's what the score is made up of. So there is definitely places within the state that these centres can be placed. But the crucial thing is it has to be planned. At the minute, this is basically the only a criteria that's taken into account is whether an individual who wants to make a huge amount of money, people who've made millions of euro on the back of this year, has got a centre. And that's the only criteria that's been used by government. And unfortunately, Roderick O'Gorman has been, in my view, abandoned by his colleagues in relation to that. So there's a desperation here. There's an we shouldn't be in that situation. We need to move to a planned system. So let's make it clear. Communities that can support additional pressure shouldn't have additional pressure.
Okay, let me bring in Patrick Costello then on that. Patrick, what do you make of this plan?
Well, look, I think there's some reading the full policy document, there are some very positive things in there, but there are things that the government is already doing. There's talk of funding anti-racism work and community development, and again, the government's already doing that. There's a talk of moving away from private profit, which is absolutely right. We should be moving away from private profit. But in March, the government launched a comprehensive accommodation strategy to provide a core of state-owned international protection accommodation. There's an expression of interest process happening. There's buildings already coming forward. There's buildings being investigated. So, you know, many of the positive things are already happening here. And what concerns me is that there's a lot of kind of vagueness in here, and there's trying to have things both ways. You know, we've seen the leader of Sinn Féin, Deputy MacDonald, saying no one can have a veto. But I would be quite concerned that the level of detail in here and the promises being made is exactly setting up a community veto on where any centre can open. Mm. And the last thing we want to do is have a situation where no centre can open, or where the process is too overburdened that no centre is slowed down and no centre can open.
Well, Piers Doherty, in fairness, when I put it to him about where centres might open, he talked about the Pubble HD Deprivation Index. And, I mean, that's a map that anybody can access. So centres could open in kind of leafy South Dublin. They could open in West Cork. They could open in different parts, different suburbs around all of our major cities and urban conurbations. There's parts of Kildare that are deemed affluent or very affluent, according to this. So, you know, there are parts of the country he talked about.
They're already opening there. There are two centres in Dublin 6. There's a centre in Dublin 4. The centres are already opening there. You know, maybe not enough, and maybe the distribution isn't fair enough, but centres are already opening in these affluent areas.
So if you're doing everything why are they setting fire to Coolock?
What I'm concerned about is that we're setting up a system here where there will be a veto, where there will be akin to planning permissions, where a system will grind to a halt. I mean, no planning permission process is one of the things that is feeding into our lack of housing supply. And the last thing we need in this area is to deal with supply, is a lack of supply. And I would agree with Pierce's point that Roderick is not getting the support that he needs from his government colleagues. Mm. So, you know, the last thing we need to do is to limit and constrain that supply. You know, but I think, again, there are other questions I have over it. The policy says it's going to end the two-tier system, but it's not clear. Is it going to, you know, the beneficiaries of temporary protection coming from Ukraine certainly had better standards, but are we going to reduce the standards for Ukrainians, or are we going to improve the standards for all applicants up to the level of Ukrainians? That's not very clear here. The issues in relation to partially safe countries, again, that seems to be going the opposite direction of creating a two-tier system.
Yeah.
And is a very vague thing. So there's a lot of the positive things in this policy, like the anti-racism funding, like the state provision, are already being progressed by the government.
Yeah.
There's a lot of vagueness. And then there's a lot of things that are, to me, concerning, because I think the actual effect will be contrary to what the claim is.
Pierce, if we take somewhere like Naas and the surrounding area, which again, according to this index you talk about, affluent or very affluent. Now, one would kind of suspect that's largely because a lot of the people there kind of on Dublin wages and living in Naas, and that bumps it up. But you go in, you carry out your consultation and you say that, listen, we're going to put a centre in this area, and people say no. At the end of all of the consultation and all the explanation, they just say, no, we don't want it. What then?
Well, first of all, let's be clear, there would be an assessment by the state of the needs of that community in the first instance. And that assessment will throw up situations where it says you should not be putting a centre in there at all. That doesn't happen at the minute. And I can give countless examples to Patrick's colleagues of where there is no criteria. Like, their government is using no criteria whatsoever in relation to this. We've situations where GP lists are closed. That means communities can't get access to GP. additional people coming in, yet we have new centres opening up in those communities. It makes no sense whatsoever. And I listened to Patrick talk about, you know, not having that type of consultation that is available for planning permission. Like, Patrick, in fairness, has been tweeting in the last week about consultation about a new road, consultation about a greenway. Why should people not have a say in terms of a new centre that is opening in their community, particularly when that community is already, it feels that they have been...
But again, to repeat the question, what do you do at the end of your consultation, as you imagine it, if people say no?
You do exactly the same thing that you would do in terms of a planning process or anything like that.
The courts decide. Pierce, that's ultimately how the planning, what happens. It will go to judicial review. It will be a court who will decide it. Like, is that where it ends up when somebody says, no, I've listened to all your consultations, Pierce, don't want immigrants here?
No, it's not that. It is about allowing IPAS to make a decision after hearing the community's views. As I said, the first step is that you wouldn't be putting centres in some locations where there already are.
I'm trying to understand it. Even at the end of the process, if people in that community say, we do not want it, IPAS then will say, well, sorry, tough luck, we're doing it.
It is up to IPAS then to carry out, to take on board the feedback that has been made and make a decision. And some of that decision might be a case that the community are saying that they don't have access to GP services. So IPAS might say, we're going to put a GP in there, into that area, or we're going to put additional teachers in there to open a new classroom in terms of the school. So it's not just a case of saying no or yes. It's about listening and responding to the needs of the community. But clearly, and this is what's different, and I listened to Patrick about moving away from the private for profit model. Yes, they're looking to increase state support, but their plan will have a majority still privatised system in the next 5 years. That's not the type of system that we're looking at. Their plan talks about no consultation with the community. Their plan talks about no criteria, bar the fact that some private person who wants to make a huge profit on this here is offering accommodation regardless of the issues. He talks about parcel designation. Parcel designation makes sense of a country, because what it means is that if there is a country that is partially safe for either a geographic area or a certain sector, it may be a case that it's not safe for women, but it's safe for men.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then you're presumed to be from a safe country and you can go through an accelerated process. And the big difference, because he says this is very similar to the government, you couldn't get further from what the government is doing from what we are saying. At the minute, it takes 18 months for a standardised decision to be taken. We are talking about tripling the capacity in terms of the IPO system and the IPAT system so that we can speedily speed up the decisions that are made, so that the two-thirds of people who are applying here who get refusals are actually safely returned to their own country. And crucially, there has to be a follow-up.
I will go back to Patrick for a last word on this. Do you think if it was as easy as let's speed up the process, the government might have done it at some stage over the last 20 years since direct provision started?
I think that the government are in complete emergency mode in relation to this. And I understand, I completely understand the numbers that are coming in here to the state. I understand the issues in terms of the numbers that have fled from Ukraine. So I understand the emergency nature of this. But what I don't understand, that 2 years on, that we're still dealing with no plan and no processes and no criteria. Patrick also talked about ending the two-tier system. Let me be clear. Nobody who's coming here for international protection should have more benefits than another person coming for international protection.
Well, let me go back to Patrick on a few of those points before we wrap this up. I mean, Patrick, the way Pierce describes it, absolutely no veto for local communities. At the end of the day, IPAS will make the decision. They will be the ultimate decision maker, despite resistance and reluctance from those communities. And, I mean, he is right. I wait, a lot of people listening at home be nodding along thinking, the government do feel like they're at sixes and sevens here, despite dealing with this for a couple of years.
Well, one of the things Pierce was talking about there was, like, IPAS will do their assessment and then say, oh, we'll put in more teachers, oh, we'll put in more GPs. But IPAS can't do that. And what we've seen is, you know, Roderick has been, as Pierce said, Roderick has been abandoned. And one of the things there is, you know, will will this audit actually produce meaningful results, or will it simply be used as a tool to delay and to provide a veto? And my concern is that it will exactly be used as a tool to delay and provide a veto. And, you know, one of the things Pierce said there is absolutely right, is that decisions are...
How will it be a veto?
They are absolutely...
The way Pierce described it, how would it be a veto?
Because
well, no, you brought up the veto. I want to ask you about it. You just said it's effectively a veto. I put that to Pierce and said, well, no, IPAS will make the decision. If somebody is absolutely recalcitrant, no way are immigrants coming in here, IPAS can say, tough luck.
Because what will happen in effect is that it will be used as a veto, and it will be used as we see with planning permission and things getting snarled up in the courts, as you say, and it will create a system whereby ultimately no decision is made. And we will find ourselves with an effective veto where no decision is being made or decisions are being constantly judicially reviewed. And, you know, instead of taking the brave decision or a risky decision, we'll end up with a situation where no decisions are made. And that will be a disaster. That will be a serious problem in terms of trying to provide accommodation, which we absolutely do need to provide.
Patrick Costello, Green Party Justice spokesperson, Pierce Doherty, Deputy Leader of Sinn Féin. Gentlemen, thank you both very much for joining me.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the award-winning MG4, the no-compromise electric hatchback with a 450-kilometre range. Recharge your soul.